You are with Ahval. I'm Yavuz Baydar, and you are with Turkish Trends. And my guest joining me from Washington, D.C. is Merve Tahiroğlu, Turkey Director of POMET, Project on Middle East and Democracy. Good to be with you, Merve.
Hi, Yavuz.
Okay, so this will be sort of a tour d'horizon of the developing and accelerating spinning Turkish story. It is deep and deepening crisis. And the latest, of course, is the declaration by the exiles, 104 of them. 10 of them are in police custody. And as just before we speak at this conversation, 8th of April, the prosecutor demanded extension of the police custody. Most probably, this will be extended. And also, detention is on the horizon, probably. And this communique, along with the earlier declaration by the ex-diplomats, quite a number of them, again about Montreux Convention and Kanal Istanbul a couple of months ago, and also yesterday or 2 days before, the ex-MPs, mainly main opposition CHP, ex-members of parliament, ex-deputies, nearly 100 of them, again, declared that they were opposed to Turkey discussing even the Montreux Convention and also opposing Kanal Istanbul. And this caused a stir. Does it mean that the squeeze is tightening around Erdogan and Bahçeli? Or how do we read into this? Because those who raise their voices now from the secular centrist camp, as opposed to earlier oppositions by this Boğaziçi students or HDP or Kurds or other human rights activists, is this a new situation?
Well, to say that this letter controversy caused a stir, I think, would be an understatement. Erdogan has straight up called it a coup attempt. So I would say it caused more than a stir. It's came to the heart of Turkish politics. And I would say that in terms of domestic politics in Turkey, particularly with regards to human rights and the way the country is being governed, authoritatively or more democratically, in terms of these questions, it's been a few weeks of crisis after crisis, one crisis after another coming at us. This particular controversy, so this particular flank of these former Navy officers and former members of parliament have come together worried that Erdogan might withdraw Turkey from the Montreux Convention because of the way Erdogan very unilaterally and in a surprising move withdrew Turkey from the Istanbul Convention, which is a very different kind of international treaty. It's a European treaty to combat violence against women. So it's a primarily human rights focused treaty. But the fact that Erdogan was unilaterally, with one decree, able to remove Turkey from an international agreement like that raised questions about what else he could do with regards to Turkey's international commitments. And I think this is part of the reason, alongside the construction of the Istanbul Canal, which a lot of people, including the government, has presented as one way of potentially circumventing the Montreux Convention, is why we have this question now raised as to what Erdogan can do. So I think fundamentally, this is about people recognizing Erdogan very much grabbing more and more powers for himself and running the country as a one-man show. This is sort of the culmination of those instances, what we've seen particularly in the last 3 months. First, Erdogan, with a decree, decided to appoint a new rector to the Boğaziçi University, which many people saw as sort of a hostile takeover attempt of a very important academic institution. and a very culturally significant institution. And then with the removing Turkey from the Istanbul Convention, again, a very important international treaty. In the meantime, there have been new threats in Turkey coming by the government to shut down the second largest opposition party. So there's a lot of changes being done. And Erdogan, I would say, in the last 3 months has been ruling more autocratically than he has in even previous months and previous years. And this is all also coming around a time, as you suggested, when his own popularity is at its lowest. So he's facing a popularity crisis, particularly because of how bad the economy is right now, and the COVID-19 pandemic certainly hasn't helped matters. He's really facing an electorate that is moving further and further away from him. So he's grabbing more and more into power by making such unilateral moves and using domestic controversies like such as this around the controversies he's been using around this letter to try to shore up his own support. I think what all of this really suggests is that we're basically in an election season in Turkey, even though we're not technically facing Turkey isn't technically facing an election until 2023. So we should have about 2 years. We're already facing a situation domestically as if this is campaign season, and Erdogan is already making moves with that in mind.
Elections, we will speak a little bit about them a little later, maybe HDP as well. But one or a couple of pollsters would oppose what you said. Metropol issued a new result, I think as of March, these some of the results. And the Erdogan's personal, as president, approval rate seems to be around 49% still. Metropol chairman Zer Sencer is explaining this as something that has been rising since Gare operation, the nationalistic rhetoric which followed that. So there are mixed data, if you will, about this thing. A personal thing one is one, but it is, there are also signs that AKP-MHP axis is weakening. So I don't know how your comment will be about this.
I think it's really hard to look at these, to interpret these polls as they come, if we look at them in terms of short-term trends. But I think we need to take a long-term approach to the way we read these things, because Turkish public opinion is extremely malleable. And Erdogan is the master of using crises, either foreign policy crises or war or refugee crisis or domestic terror attacks. Or other political crises. He's the master of using crises to shore up support in the short term, and he's always able to do that. I think the inability for us to have an analyst in Turkey to have a consensus of Erdogan's support and how much he is worried based on these poll numbers about his own electability just shows us that Erdogan has come to be seen, particularly in the West and from in the international community's eyes, as this invincible leader of Turkey, because he has been in power for almost 20 years now. But in fact, he's able to stay in power because of just a bargain of a few percentage points here and there. That's the way he's able to game the system. It's not because he has, more than 60% support or 90% support, as we see in other, more real dictatorships. Mm-hmm. And this is why I think the few percentage points matter. When you say that this poll still shows that Erdogan might have 49%, that's actually very low for Erdogan. And that actually is troubling for Erdogan in Turkey's political context, because Turkey isn't, Belarus at this point. And it really matters if it's 49 or 51. For a leader like Erdogan, who has always unquestionably had the support of more than 50% of the Turkish public, the fact that that's in question right now, and other members of the opposition, not necessarily the leaders of opposition parties, but other characters like the Istanbul mayor or the mayor of Ankara, that these leaders in these polls seem to be competitive in terms of their public support with Erdogan itself says a lot. So I do think that, you know, in the long-term trajectory of things, we are really facing a very interesting moment in Turkish politics where I don't know if in the next election, whether that's next year or in 2 years, whether Erdogan will actually emerge as the strong, you know, victor of that. I think that's a question mark, and that's why we're seeing all these crises right now in Turkey.
In a most fresh article, wonderfully titled, How Erdogan Got His Groove Back, the Stephen Cook from Council on Foreign Relations, I love this title, he basically kind of interprets it in the other way. You know, this Cook's article basically says, as we say, as the Turkish proverb goes, you know, wolf loves the foggy weather. And Erdogan basically thrives on chaotic circumstances. Probably it's overlapping with his mind. And he's the master of, you know, steering towards strength, consolidation, and eventually victory through fog. And Cook's article is saying that he's getting his strength back, and he may take more things in control. Yet we will see. I mean, it's all Turkish story is puzzling. So let me just have mentioned it.
That's certainly what Erdogan wants. I think that's what he's going for. And I you know, agree with Stephen that he always has won in the past when he has done this. But I still have some hope in the Turkish opposition. Turkey isn't a static country. So I'm hoping that one day the Turkish opposition is going to be able to respond to these tricks and not let Erdogan get away with them.
I see. Two or three more questions, because we are having this tour d'horizon on politics in general. As one consequence of this ex-admiral's declaration or manifesto, or whatever you may want to call it, Erdogan quickly started focusing on CHP as the next target for demonization. Became even more personal in his attack against Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, but also CHP, basically labeling CHP as, or implying that CHP is behind what he calls a coup attempt or coup plotting. Why do you think he's, apart from targeting HDP and other segments, CHP is now the new one, is the most popular now, one in, amongst his enemies?
Well, this particular incident, I mean, the fact that these former establishment figures, or I mean, I wouldn't actually call them establishment figures, but they very much seem that way, these admirals and former parliamentarians who came up with the statement, the statement is the easiest thing for Erdogan to be able to point to and say, this is just like the previous attempted coups in Turkish history, which Erdogan does a really good job of completely associating with the main opposition party, the CHP, and only the main opposition party, the CHP, even though that has been a Turkish establishment thing for many decades. So to point to this letter saying that, you know, this is reminiscent of all the times that the Turkish army or basically unelected elites in the Turkish state would come and make a threat or issue a warning against an elected government, that it very much looks like a coup. It evokes a lot of those memories. So this is a very easy trick for Erdogan to be able to point to this and say, see, this is a coup attempt. And of course, he's going to then say this is associated with the main opposition party, which has a history of supporting coup, even though that's not quite true. He has done a very good he has taken an effort for the last 20 years of branding the CHP as the party of coups in the eyes of many of his supporters, but also much of the electorate. So this is a winning strategy for him to be able to point to the CHP and say, this is an intervention that defies a democratically elected government and its wishes. Of course, it's a bit of a manufactured crisis. I don't think Erdogan is trying to leave the Montreux Convention. The Kanal Istanbul project wouldn't actually bypass the Montreux Convention's most important provisions, as people have been saying for the past few days. So in many ways, Erdogan is simply using this statement now for his own game as a part of a political tool to be able to go against the opposition and to paint again the main opposition party as a coup supporter. And this is really dangerous, because ultimately what we're left with is, from the way Erdogan is making this, making Turkish politics seem right now, is that either you support Erdogan or you support one of two things, which is terrorism or coups. That's a very dangerous mindset for the electorate to have.
Ex-admiral's declaration seems to have rattled also the minor component of the opposition bloc, E-Party, Good Party, because one of the ex-admirals is a founding member, Ergun Mengi, of E-Party, and he seems to be pointed out by the others as the instigator of this declaration. And this rattled Meral Akşener, the chairwoman, who zigzagged, now still zigzags actually, and not really taking these people who basically exercise their freedom of speech, etc. So there is this confusion, and this element of declaration of the ex-admiral seems to have come as a new factor for the disarrayed opposition. Do you think it will help them to get together, or vice versa? What can we read into this new situation?
So the instigators of this letter, the prominent figures of this letter, are quite nationalist. Which, like every issue that Erdogan and the government tries to throw as a wedge to divide the opposition to the opposition. You mentioned the Gare operation, which was against the PKK in Iraq, which was, again, a very nationalist Turkish rally around the flag kind of situation, kind of an operation. This one, too, it brings up this letter, Turkey's attachment to the Montreux Convention, that, you know, the fact that the convention also gave Turkey the rights over the Straits is very much presented as a nationalist backlash against Erdogan's dangerous moves. And Erdogan is now saying that, you know, it's the opposite thing, that it, now we have to go against these people are the anti-nationalists because they are actually against the workings of our government and our democracy and do not follow the people's will. So these are all things that are designed to drive a wedge and between opposition parties and figures with various nationalist leanings and loyalties. So Erdogan is, of course, going to use it this way, like he uses everything that has to do with nationalist sentiments in Turkey to divide the opposition. I think really what we need to see from Meral Akşener and Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, all of these opposition leaders, to find a way to not be drawn into Erdogan's manufactured crisis like the one around this one. Akşener's initial reaction to this crisis was to say that this is a distraction from the actual ongoing problems in Turkey. I think that instinctive initial reaction was actually a correct one, because it correctly read how the government responded to this letter and how it immediately tried to take the letter. It could have ignored this statement. The government, Erdogan, could have ignored this statement, but he jumped on it because it's a very good tool for him to be able to use against the opposition. And I think the best thing all these opposition leaders can do is to not play into that.
It's in other words, it's a momentum again for the opposition to get together, to focus on not to get into drawn into the vortex of Erdogan's agenda in a way. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. They should. I mean, Erdogan is trying to use this as an opportunity to do the opposite, in order to make it into a major crisis where the opposition falters and cannot have a coherent response to it. So they need to be able to respond to that.
One more question and I will let you go, and it's about the HDP. HDP, as the third largest group in parliament and the second largest element or component of the opposition bloc, is a black sheep. And it's sort of an untouchable, and it continues to be this way. And there's also a hanging Damocles sword over the party and its members. Nine subpoenas, or what you may want to call it, fezleke, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe that's the right word, for the lifting of, excuse me?
I think it's a criminal investigation, or fezleke.
It's an investigation call, which means they may end up losing their immunities and seats. Nine of them are already facing that threat, and yesterday 11 more landed on General Assembly. So parties, basically targeted. But having seen that, what do you think? Do you think, many people are asking this question, is Erdogan really determined to shut down, close the party, HDP, or is it just tactical so he keeps the party as under constant threat until whenever he decides about the new elections?
Well, I certainly hope that Erdogan will not end up moving forward with the shutdown of this party, because I think that the ongoing assaults against the HDP, which includes all of the things you mentioned, not just the threat to shut down the party, these assaults on the HDP are the single most devastating actions coming from the Turkish government with regards to Turkey's democratic trajectory and human rights. We're talking about the third largest political party in the country. This isn't some marginal party. It represents a huge fraction of the electorate and of the Turkish public. To completely ignore the very legitimate demands of these parties' voters and try to remove the party from the political equation, whether by completely shutting down the party or by removing individual members from parliament with these criminal investigations, as you mentioned, itself is a major transgression against the electoral will. And I think the consequences of that for the people will simply be to lose faith in the political system, lose faith in a democratic contestation of ideas and democratic governance. This is why I think it's devastating whether or not Erdogan follows through, whether or not Turkey shuts down the HDP. Already this case and already the media frenzy around it is completely helping Erdogan and playing into his electoral strategy and into his hands in this way already. So it's benefiting him. I really hope, though, that the Constitutional Court will not, which is really very much acting at the behest of Erdogan these days. So I really hope that the Constitution Court does not move forward with this, because that would represent a whole new level of transgression. But it's, even if they don't, what is going on right now, this complete defiance of a major political party is something that I think is probably the biggest problem that Turkish democracy is facing.
Mm-hmm. Full suspense. Continued, to be continued, because that's what the system crisis do to you. And this is what we continue to monitor. Thank you very much for this conversation, Merve Tahiroğlu. And I will also add that you penned an excellent article about the Clubhouse, the civilian dialogue, and the social media tools for Brookings Tech blog. I think I suggest that will be our next topic to enlighten the public, because much is going on over there as well, and other points that you raised about Turkey's online media and the throttled internal conversation of the public. That, until then, I think we shall say goodbye, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Great chatting with you.
You can follow Ahval News online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.